I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and World of Warcraft. And at some point, we will get to other games. I know we had people on Patreon who were asking if we would get to Overwatch and doing Overwatch lore. That is something I'd like to touch on, just not this week. I'm Anne Stickney. I'm one of two lore focus writers from Blizzard Watch, and I've got both of my wonderful co-hosts with me this week. First up, he's a dog sticking out his tongue on my Skype window. It's Joe Perez.
Well, hello there, and hey. Blepping Sylvanas is always appropriate for any conversation.
Is your dog's name Sylvanas?
My dog's name is Sylvanas.
Oh my gosh. Okay, you're a total nerd, Joe, but we love you. So our other co-host is a very shocked cat, a.k.a. Matt Rossi, our other lore columnist. Hey, Rossi.
Hello, and if you knew anything about Sasquatch, my cat, you'd know that he is shocked by absolutely everything. There's a bird outside. You're walking down the stairs. Mommy has milk. There's a tree. Literally everything surprises this cat. He is continuously amazed and befuddled by all life. He's also named after a member of Alpha Flight.
Oh,
I gotta
yeah.
point that out.
See, now that's there we go. Again, yeah. You are also a nerd. So
yes.
There's a reason we're all friends. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I don't have any pets, but if I did, they would probably be named after something dorky. I mean, I keep a plastic Stegosaurus on the dash of my car because Firefly. So
I got a neat Therizinosaurus for Christmas, by the way.
Cool. All right. Well, this week. Oh, sorry.
We're talking about getting a ferret, and I'm totally going to name it Garrus when I get it. Just saying.
Yes, should. It can calibrate things. So this week we're going to actually take a look at, well, I think last time we had to skip a week here because I had a family emergency come up. So if people are wondering why this is a week late, this is why it's a week late. I had an emergency come up. So we decided to just go ahead and push it to the next Sunday. Last time when we were talking about the Horde and the state of the Horde, if I remember correctly. Yes?
That is correct.
Okay.
That's right, yeah.
At the end of the show, we talked about the possibility of discussing the Vrykul and their role in Warcraft because they were introduced in Wrath of the Lich King, but they're kind of making a resurgence in Legion. So we're going to go ahead and talk about that, which sounds good to me. Rossi, do you want to kind of go over who these guys are?
Okay. This is going to be one of those summing up things where I can't possibly hit all the highlights, but the basic gist is the Vrykul are one of the seed races created by the Titans to help them shape Azeroth when they were shaping it. Various seed races include the Earthen, the Giants, the Tolvir, the Mogu, and the Vrykul were more or less seem to be limited to Northrend and other places north of Azeroth, just like the Mogu were south. And although that's we'll talk about that later. The Vrykul, when they were originally created, were all made out of rock. They were rock people. They were giant rock people, kind of halfway between an earthen and a giant, sort of like an intermediate stage. And for a long, long time, that's who they were. They were big rock dudes who did what the Titans wanted. At some point, And we don't know exactly when this happened. It seems to have happened after the Titans themselves left and put their Watchers in charge. The Curse of Flesh started hitting the Vrykul pretty hard. The first thing it did was shrink them down a little bit and make them fleshy. Which is, if you've been to Northrend and you've seen the giant ones who run around saying, "Yellows go flog!" Those guys, those are the Vrykul, the first stage of the Curse of Flesh, turn them into basically gigantic, crazy Viking. Vikings the size of a tauren standing on top of an orc's shoulders. And so that's, you know, they were okay with that. They're like, yeah, we're all right. We liked being made out of rock, but we're okay. As long as we're still giant, we're okay with that. Unfortunately, the Curse of Flesh wasn't done with them. So they then hit the second stage, which is when they started getting much smaller. And they really
were. Children were tiny.
Tiny, tiny little children. Like teacup-sized children from their perspective. Like, you know, I can hold the entire baby in like one finger. And they weren't. Most of them were kind of like horrified by this because these kids were going to grow up and be stunted
Puny.
By their perspective. Yeah. And the Vrykul's whole culture was about being powerful warriors. They fought for the Titans. They were involved in the war. God knows how long ago that was. You know, this is one of those things where thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years pass and so forth. But they were not too down with all this. At the same time, while this was all happening, one of the major Titan Watchers, a guy named Loken, the prime designate, was up to no good, for lack of a better term. He was colluding with the old god Yogg-Saren, who had been locked up in Ulduar, and he wanted out. And Loken wanted to let him out, but unfortunately, when he enacted his plan to like get the other Watchers all, you know, scattered and get the Titan servants basically put in stasis, he killed Thorim, the Thunder Watcher, killed his wife, Sif, and as a result, Thorim banished himself, which meant that Loken couldn't get his sigil to open the locks on Ulduar. And as a result of that happening, there was nobody to really watch out for the Vrykul. The Vrykul were basically left to their own devices. So the Vrykul are sitting there going, where did the Titans go? Why are we shrinking? Why won't anyone tell us what's going on? Why can't we get any help? And one of them, a king named Ymiron, who was in charge of a lot of the Vrykul, not all of them, but a big chunk of them, especially the ones in what we now call Howling Fjord, he said, no, who's powerful enough to do this? There's only one answer. The Titans. The Titans are doing this to us. I say, no, we turn our backs on the Titans. They're no good. If they're doing this to us, they're no good. We've been loyal servants, and this is what how they repay us. We're going to just kill them. All these little runts, we're going to kill them. As soon as they're born, you kill them. And if you refuse to kill them, we kill you, and then we kill them. Some of the Vrykul obviously were like, they're short, but that doesn't mean that we have to murder them. I mean, you know, just...
It's my tiny teacup baby. I don't want to kill it. Yeah.
So we don't know how they left because we don't know exactly when this happened. We don't know if it was pre or post sundering, but at some point they took off. They may have just migrated straight south. They may have gotten on boats. I mean, they're Viking people. They probably had boats. Either way, they ended up in what's now Lordaeron. Specifically, it seems to be in Tirisfal is where they first landed. And they headed more or less straight east to what we now call Tyr's Hand. And it seems to be Tyr's Hand is where they were raised. Now, Legion puts some interesting questions in here, but for now, we'll just say they seem to have made landfall in those areas. And the places like Tyr's Hand, Tirisfal, and so forth, those seems to be the places where they lived. And for a long time, that's where humans come from. Like, humans are the Vrykul who just kept shrinking. Like, they got shrunk down to human size and became humans. Now, the Vrykuls up in Northrend who had, like, driven them out were like, okay, we got rid of all the runted, stunted ones, but now what do? We can't have children. Because if we do, they'll just turn into runts and we'll have to kill them. So, I mean, we just can't do that, so what are we going to do? And Ymiron, again, was like, well, we know how to put ourselves in stasis because the Titans used to put us in stasis all the time. We'll just do that again, and we'll just sleep. We'll sleep, and then we'll wait till the curse has lost its power, and we'll wake up, and we'll repopulate the world. That didn't quite work out as he planned because he didn't see the Lich King coming. So while the Vrykul were mostly sleeping in Northrend, the Lich King came and did his Lich Kingy things and found them. And he was like, ooh, big crazy people I can use. Oh, I can work with this. You guys need a god. I need followers. I am a god. And they're like, well, he certainly seems to be a god. He can wake the dead and stuff. All right, sure. And he seems
we'll follow the death god.
Yeah, and that's pretty much that's a down and dirty. I mean, it didn't really cover the Valkyr or whatever, but we're still learning about the Valkyr.
Well,
but
we'll kind of get into that anyway. Yeah. Just to clarify, the Vrykul, when all of this went down, there was the quest out in Howling Fjord. It does specify that this was 15,000 years ago, so it was 5,000 years before the Sundering hit. So these guys, when they went into hibernation, they didn't even wake up for the Sundering. So the people that walked off, they just walked off, and apparently when the Sundering happened and the world split, those Vrykul, the midgets, the runts, were split off from the rest of them up in Northrend just due to the continental shift. Is that what you call it? I guess that's what you would call it.
Yeah, I guess that's the closest thing, yeah.
And that's why there aren't really any records of the Vrykul in particular, like, down south too much. Not too much. There's little bits and pieces here and there, obviously. And obviously there's Titan lore down south that we know about. The Vrykul, though, what I find interesting about these guys is, you know, it says that they were created by the Titans, but it doesn't specify what their purpose was.
There's like one point where they mentioned that they fought in the war, but it doesn't say what they did.
It's like, were they soldiers? I mean, you would assume, because if you go up to, which hall is it? It's Halls of
Stone or Halls of Lightning?
Halls of Lightning.
If you go to Halls of Lightning, it looks like there's a bunch of them being manufactured. And yes, that part of that was Loken creating soldiers for his own purposes, but it almost makes me think that that's how they were created in the first place. They were just created as like mass amounts of soldiers they were like a soldier class for this war that the Titans were fighting with the old gods.
It's interesting too, because the Halls of Stone have the Creation Forge in them.
Yeah.
And there's a specific thing in Halls of Lightning. No, it's in Halls of Stone. I'm sorry. Cause it's the, I always forget the name of the thing that the big thing Bran wakes up.
Oh, the triumvirate thing or whatever.
Yeah. When he wakes that thing up, the first thing it does is talk about how Loken reconfigured the Creation Forge to make it impossible for the new ones that he's making to become flesh.
Yeah.
And so that says to me that it's similar to like when the Mogu reverse engineered the Curse of Flesh. Loken was told, probably by Yogg-Saron, this is how this works.
Well, it makes sense, right?
This is how to avoid it. But I mean,
he's got an old god whispering in his ear. It makes absolute sense that the old gods would be like, look, I can give you an army. I can give you an army to accomplish my ends. Mm-hmm. And here's how you do it. Here's how you reverse. Here's what you need to take out of the equation. And then everything will be fine.
And it also seems to have also taken out their capacity for free will, interestingly enough, because the other Vrykul, the ones that went to stasis 15,000 years ago, they can make choices. They can choose who to follow. Like, Ymiron can make choices. He chose the Lich King. He was chosen by him as well, but they picked each other. This isn't like the Iron Vrykul up in Ulduar don't have a choice. They serve. So, well, that's interesting to me.
That's also an interesting distinction too, because you wonder if that's what the big difference is. And we talked about this before when we started talking about the Old Gods and the Titans and the creation of Azeroth as a whole. It's the specific creation of these life forms on Azeroth, if the infusing of those natural elements and the, you know, for lack of a better term, those corrupted materials are what give them that free will, are what let us have that free will as those player characters that are descendants from these Titan creations. And then if the perfection of it or the removal of that curse or that sort of tainted material, quote unquote, just turns them into these perfect, absolute, autonomous, or not even autonomous, but like enslaved robot type things.
Well, I think Ian might remember this. Doesn't Algolon say something about that?
Algolon,
your imperfection, that which gives you free will, isn't that? I thought he said that.
Yeah, he says your imperfection, that which gives you free. Hang on, let me look up the quote real quick here, because it's something that he says after the fight is over with.
Yeah,
I thought he's like. Holy heck, you things are not what I thought you were.
Perhaps it is your imperfection that which grants you free will, that allows you to persevere against cosmically calculated odds. You prevailed where the Titans' own perfect creations have failed.
Yeah, which is interesting, because it's like, the other thing is Algolon, when Algolon arrives, he seems kind of shocked that we've managed to do what we've done, and says that he's seen countless other worlds that have, you know, the Titans have crafted that have just failed, completely failed. So yeah, it's one of those things where it's like the curse of flesh is considered a bad thing, but at the same time, maybe that's what's making us as strong as we are.
Well, and it's, I think it's not only that capacity for free will that makes it a good thing, but also Algalon makes mention of the fact of, you know, all these lives that were lost previously, and, you know, they didn't have our tenacity, they didn't have our love for life. Maybe it's that capacity for emotion as well, because if you're a robot, you don't care what the hell happens, you just go about your function, you just do whatever you're programmed to go do. But when you have that emotion and that free will, you can make decisions based off of what you're feeling and seeing and what you're processing. That could be all the difference in the world.
It's really interesting, too, because Northrend is dotted with those engines, the engine of the Maker and so forth, which is where not just the Vrykul, but the Earthen and the Giants come from. It's actually completely throughout the entire continent. They're all over the place. They're in Sholazar. They're in Storm Peaks. I'm pretty sure there's one in a crack in Howling Fjord, right?
Yes.
That's where they. So they're all over the place.
They're kind of seated all over Northrend, much like Yogg-Saron's Reach is seated all over Northrend. And maybe that's part of the reason why Yogg-Saron's Reach was so powerful, was that he was using existing Titan facilities, possibly using their technology. He had Ulduar completely locked up by the time we got there.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody that was in there was kind of dancing on the strings of his tentacle, fleshy, whatever. Yogg-Saron's kind of gross. They're all kind of gross, but he in particular is really kind of Yogg-Saron. I think I find Yogg-Saron probably the most fascinating of all of the old gods because of that weird thing that happens when you fight him, where he goes into that whole, you go into his vision room,
mm-hmm.
and you see the different visions of different periods of history. And you realize that this thing that's been up on, up in Northern for how long, has witnessed or has knowledge of all of these events. How? If he's been locked away up there, how does he know all this stuff? Does he know it because of the adventurers that have arrived? Or does he know it because the old gods are just kind of like everywhere at once?
What's also interesting to me is that you find Vrykul in the... they're in Ulduar, this is Iron Vrykul all over the place serving, but there's also Vrykul in the Twilight's Hammer.
Yep.
Yes.
And they're in there. Like, they break into Ulduar. They're raiding it while you're in there. And they're there later in Cataclysm. They drop out of the sky onto the boat while you're trying to catch Deathwing. So the Vrykul are a really fascinating mixed bag. There's Vrykul who obviously served Neptulon. There's Vrykul who very clearly served Twilight's Hammer. We've just discovered new Vrykul who serve new things, and we'll talk about that later. But there's Vrykul who serve, you know, Loken. And it's just like, and there's ones who are just like out, you know, minding their own sort of business in their little camps, just kind of raiding whatever they feel like. And it's just, it feels like when they woke up, they didn't have the slightest idea what to do with the new world that they found.
Well, what's also fascinating for me about the Vrykul is that they also have, even in their fleshy forms, some of them, the most... I want to say the strongest ties to their original form and purpose, not just the stone forms, but if they were created as foot soldiers to fight against the elementals at behest of, you know, the Titans in this war against the old gods back in the day. And you look at all the different flavors of Vrykul now, they still hold such a strong connection to these elements. Like you talked about the ones that serve Neptulon. If you look at them, it's all water magic. It's all this ability to summon the mists and things like that. And it's fascinating to me how varied that one particular race is, not least of which because I love shamanic stuff and things like that.
Well, yeah, there's the Frostborn, too. There's Frozen ones. And then there's, you know, there's the Valkyr who are weird.
And there's the lightning ones that we experience with General Brogrim, or I can never pronounce his name.
Yeah.
But, like, he's obviously capable of controlling electricity and just lightning. So that's kind of an interesting point. Like, just their elemental capacity is just always intriguing to me.
I think probably what makes this interesting, obviously in Wrath of the Lich King, this was a pretty big deal because this was a pretty big reveal, even the events in Howling Fjord, because we didn't really know where humanity had come from. They just sort of were there, and we'd heard stories about like the first human tribes, you know, Arathor, the Arathi, all of that, and the Troll Wars. And that was long after the Sundering, long after, you know, the High Elves had established themselves in Kel'thas. We didn't really know anything about humanity prior to that. So this particular reveal, the one in Howling Fjord, was pretty much humanity is basically, it is a Titan creation. It is a Titan construct that was afflicted with the curse of flesh and went wrong. And that adds them to an ever-growing list of creations of the Titans that have gone wrong in one way or another, because you've got them, you've got the dwarves, you've got the gnomes, you've got the Mogu, you've got who else? There's more. There's
Tolvir.
More the Tolvir. You've got the Tolvir. They're all over Azeroth. It seems like almost every race that on Azeroth, existing on Azeroth, native races are very rare and very few and far between. And it seems like the trolls, maybe the Akir and the Tauren are possibly the only ones that weren't affected. Maybe, no, the goblins were created.
Yeah, possibly the Firbolgs and Pandaren, but they seem to be related to the ancients, as are like the Wolvar.
But
the
ancients were creations of the world rather than creations of the Titans, so that would make them kind of a native race.
Yeah, right. at least they're native, but at least it's not like there is some speculation that the Tauren are actually created by Niazao, like the original Tauren root race comes from Niazao, because
yeah.
Before the Sundering, there wouldn't have been a divide between the ancients and the Pandaren aspect. Wait, the old aspects, what are they called again? My God. So many words for these things.
You're talking about the ancients still?
You talking about the August Celestials?
Thank you, the August Celestials,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
The August Celestials and the ancients are basically the same thing. They're just, the August Celestials are the ones who specifically hang out in Pandaria. But it's still basically the same thing. So before that happened, Niazao would have just been another ancient. And that means that the Tauren might actually be from Pandaria originally.
Which would make a lot of sense. I mean, what are the races that we don't know the origins of right now, really, truly?
Tauren. Tauren and trolls.
Tauren, trolls.
Firbolg. We don't know where they
goblins.
Come from.
Goblins. We really don't know.
Goblins were manufactured.
We know that they are responsible, that they exposed themselves to something that changed them.
Yeah.
They
were kind of like enslaved by the trolls, and then they ran into the Khajamite, and it made them smarter, and they turned on them. So they weren't, prior to that, we don't know, actually.
Right.
We don't know what they were before the exposure to the Khajamite. Tuskar, yeah, that's right, Tuskar. We don't know where they came from.
The Quillbor, we don't know where they really originate from, and I think kobolds.
No, we think we know about kobolds, because kobolds are supposedly related to trogs.
Yeah.
We think we know. We don't know for sure, though.
Yeah. But the weird thing about trogs is there's like, trogs are the other half of the earth and destabilization from dwarves. Like, you can go dwarf or you can go trog. Mm-hmm. And the trogs then have the grummels as their shaped descendants. Because the Mogu, who, again, Titan creations, took the trogs, who were Titan creations, that went wrong, and turned them into grummels.
So it seems like right now, all of the races that we don't know the exact origins of, they can all be tied back to one ancient or another.
Except trolls.
Potentially.
Except for trolls.
Trolls have the Loa, and some of the Loa are ancestral.
They call, Tauren Druids call the ancients, they call them Loa.
Yeah.
So that might be the tie there somewhere. I don't know. And of course, March is when World of Warcraft Chronicle Volume 1 comes out, and theoretically this should explain some of this stuff as far as like evolutionary ties and that war between the Titans and the Old Gods. We don't know exactly what's going to be in the book yet, but some of the preview art has been really interesting. There's been beautiful, beautiful pieces by, I believe it's Peter Lee that's doing the artwork for it, some of the artwork for it.
Nice.
And one of them specifically, it kind of shows the Old Gods like in their moment of glory right when they were going to start fighting the Titans, and then one of them shows Zinashari. So I mean, the few pieces that we've seen from the book seem to indicate that these periods of history will be expanded upon, and we will see more about that. I don't know if we're going to see anything about like evolution, just basic evolution and that kind of thing. And I'm almost like, part of me wants these mysteries to remain mysteries, because once they're fully explained, it's like, oh, well, there's no surprises anymore.
Well, part of me is also like, I really want this to come out, not because, not And it's not that I don't like that sense of mystery. I want to know how right we, like,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know about you, but like we've made a lot of calls over the last few weeks, and I want to know how close we've been on these.
I'd be disappointed if we were close. Yeah. I'm not trying for close. I'm trying for as far as possible.
We kind of go a little bit out there, and I'm okay with going a little bit out there, but I'm afraid that if everything is defined, then where am I going to dig up new stuff? Who am I kidding? I will find new stuff to dig up.
There's always something to do.
There's always something. Warcraft, the Warcraft universe, as far as that goes, it's like so expansive that there's always a new mystery to look into. Legion, however, Legion seems to be kind of well on the way to discussing a lot of these loose ends that we haven't had clarified just yet.
It's definitely like, I mean, we did a dungeon in Valshara the other night.
Hold up.
I'm not going to do spoilers. I'm just saying that we did it.
Okay.
And, you know, that showed us that there's stuff out there that we didn't even know about.
We didn't even know existed.
And there's also, again, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but there's quite a bit of Rykul stuff in Stormheim.
Yeah.
And also the Warrior Class Hall and the Halls of Valor dungeon. And all of that stuff ties into stuff we've been talking about.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that a little more towards the end of the show, and we'll make sure that we slap a spoiler warning on there so people that are avoiding spoilers aren't going to get spoiled. But let's go back to the Vrykul, because there's different kinds of Vrykul.
Yeah.
And if we talk about the Vrykul, we have to talk about the Valkyr, because they're kind of tied together.
Mm-hmm.
And the Valkyr in particular, even after Wrath of the Lich King was over with, the Vrykul, or the Valkyr, actually came more into focus because they allied with Sylvanas and they were helping her very heavily in Cataclysm. They are the ones that raise the dead now. They are the ones that are bolstering the ranks of the Forsaken. And it's because of this deal that they made with Sylvanas, which is kind of fascinating in and of itself. But do you want to talk about the Valkyr in Northrend specifically?
We probably should. I mean, those are the only ones we actually have in game at the moment. The Valkyr are interesting because we don't really know yet exactly what the deal is with them. There's been some stuff revealed recently that we can't talk about yet, but we do know that they seem to have like a weird control over life and death.
And the Valkyr that were introduced in Wrath of the Lich Kings, the ones that are like allied with the Lich King himself, they're kind of a different breed almost.
Yeah. It's like he's recreated them. It's like he's recreated them. And they had a place, I can't remember the exact, was it the Hildnir? No, that was the ones who were resisting him. I'm trying to remember the exact place where the Valkyr were being created. There was a place in Ymir-Yar.
In Valkyron.
Yeah. The ones in Valkyron were basically like going through various trials until the Lich King chose them, and then he empowered them. Like, we saw that in Utgard Pinnacle. We got to see him make Svala Sarrowgrave into a Valkyr.
Yeah.
And he directly empowered her to do that. So that's like, it feels like he's copying something.
Well, you know what it seems like to me almost? So if the Lich King goes and he goes to the Vrykul and they tell him stories of these warriors, these spiritual warriors, the Valkyrie, and they explain and they describe it to him, it's almost like he's creating his own version of it based off of the description of the tales of people like, you know, King Ymiron and stuff like that. So, like, because we already know, and this is not really that much of a spoiler, we already know that there's different types of Valkyr. There seems to be a living version of the Valkyr. So the undead version is something like, it's almost like the Lich King remade them in almost like his image, so to speak.
Yeah, whatever the difference is, though, they're the ones that he made in the Scourge. They definitely, I don't know how to explain this. They kind of choose. They're like choosers of the slain. That's what they are. They pick the ones that get to be like made, you know, undead Vrykul by the Lich King versus the ones that he turns into Vargr. And the Vargr are like these horrible, like loathsome monstrosities that are basically just battering rams.
The worthy ones get to kind of ascend, and the unworthy ones get to be
fodder.
Yeah, basically bodies on the field, arrows in the quiver, as Sylvanas would put it.
Yeah, they're called Vargul, I think they're called.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking them up. And they're basically just shambling, rotting monstrosities. They're not found worthy by the Lich King. And so, essentially, it feels like Arthas is basically prioritizing how much of his power he used and where. Like, you guys are good enough to be shock troops, but I don't want to have to care about you. So, yeah, boom, you can be that dead. These guys, on the other hand, these guys are like really cool. They'll be my select. They'll get to be, you know, slightly better.
These guys know how to get things done, so we'll put them in a slightly higher role. And these ones that have failed, all they're good for is just like mindless fighting, so we'll turn them into a mindless fighter. And it's the Vrykul that make that judgment, pretty much. And it's interesting because it's the modern Valkyr, obviously the ones that are they're fighting for the Lich King's favor. They're fighting to become these Valkyr because they have revered the Lich King as this kind of replacement god.
Yeah, because they turned into the Titans.
Yeah, and once they are created, once they've been transformed into Valkyr, they're pretty much bound to him. They don't have any choice in the matter. The choice is, do I want to be a Valkyr? And most of them seem to be really gung-ho about that idea. Yes, we would very much like to be one.
Well, because you saw that, like, there's that village in the Stormpeaks that have that is not, that they're, like, not down with the whole Valkyr thing.
No.
And they're the Hildimir? I think it's the Hildimir. They're the ones who are engaged. They engage in a very similar kind of fighting.
The Polar Bear Clan?
Yeah.
Yeah, Hildimir.
They one of them, however, when they get chosen, they go up to try and get Thorim to make them into his bride. And he's like, of course, he's been depressed over his dead wife for like 12,000 years or however long it's been. So he's like, he doesn't do it. But that's what, it's like the same thing. It's just, it's like Arthas took this cultural practice. And I don't know what would have happened had Thorim chosen one of them. I get the sense, though, and again, man, so much stuff to talk about later, but it's like you wonder, what was Thorim going to do? If he says yes, okay, you can be my wife, what happens? Do they just, okay, I'll hang out up here on your tower of ice, and we just both
vote? Or does she ascend to something else?
Yeah, does
what?
She become of like a Valkyr or a super Valkyr or something? What was Sif? If Sif wasn't a watcher, because you know, she wasn't, was she just another... Valkyr, you know,
it's also a little weird that they have that kind of custom going on when the Titan Watchers are essentially, they're kind of like giant robots almost.
Yeah, giant rock people. But he has a wife and he
loves
her.
But the giant robot would giant robot need love. Yeah. I don't know.
he's obviously like, when you go into Thorim's chamber, he's being manipulated by an image of Sif and she's right there and she looks like just, you know, another Valkyr, not a Valkyr, a Vrykul. She's just a Vrykul woman. So it's like, what? What's going on here? There's a lot of weird stuff going on in Valkyr culture, in Vrykul culture, sorry.
Yeah, so the Valkyr, as far as the Valkyr go, after the Lich King was defeated, obviously the Lich King is gone. Well, all of these Valkyr, they were bound to the Lich King. So once he was defeated, they had nowhere to go. And in the short story, Edge of Night, it says that there's only 9 Valkyr left. It's these 9 that are up there on Ice Crown Citadel. Sylvanas goes up to Ice Crown Citadel, right? She goes up there to make sure that Arthas is good and dead because that's what she's after. She wants him good and dead. And she gets up there and she discovers that they've created another Lich King. They've created another Lich King and they've stuck him on the throne. And it's the same thing all over again. And she's kind of like, well, I'm done with my purpose. Arthas is dead. I have no reason to be. So she kind of throws herself off the frozen throne. And when she does this, the Valkyr sort of approach her and they show her what will happen to the Forsaken if she's no longer there. And it's kind of horrifying because they're just going to die out. Sylvanas, you have to keep in mind, Sylvanas, she's like this horrifying person. But at the same time, she has the best interests of the Forsaken at heart in terms of these are her people. They are the only people she has. And she's going to lead them because nobody else will. They're all stuck in this same sort of limbo between life and death, where they can't be one, they can't be the other, and they can't go back to their former lives because of the things that they did when they were undead and, you know, within the Lich King's control. But what the Valkyr showed her was that the Forsaken will just die out. I mean, they can't procreate. And with no Arthas to create more Scourge, to create more Forsaken, there's nothing left. And the Valkyr said, well, we can help you with that, but you have to help us. Because we're bound to this spot. We can't go anywhere. We can't do anything. But if we had somebody else that we could bind ourselves to, that would be great. And what they ended up doing was they made this pact and brought Sylvanas back to life. One of them sacrificed themselves to bring Sylvanas back from death, pretty much.
It was actually the leader of the group.
It was the leader of the group, yeah. It was Anne Hilda Caller. She sacrificed herself to bring Sylvanas back, which left eight. And then they went with Sylvanas, and they are the ones, when you start as a Forsaken now, as of Cataclysm, when you start as a Forsaken, you are awakened by a Valkyr.
Yep, which I thought was a cool touch.
It is. It's a cool touch. There was a really interesting thing about this, though, because the thing is like, if Sylvanas is controlling the Valkyr, and if Sylvanas is bound to the Valkyr like this, and if Sylvanas is raising the dead with the Valkyr, how does that make her any different from Arthas? And this was what Garrosh Hellscream had a problem with. It was a combination of how does this make you any different from the Lich King? And also, as an orc, and as an orc of Draenor in particular, I mean, he didn't go through the first, second, third war. He was just on Draenor. His people revered the spirits of the dead. They revered their ancestors. They spoke to their ancestors on a regular basis. You know, they had chats with them and stuff like that. That was, you honor the dead. This was not, what Sylvanas is doing is not honoring the dead, and it's not letting the ancestors' spirits pass on like they should. So it's just this kind of like disgusting thing that Garrosh is witnessing here. And Sylvanas is trying to tell him, yeah, see, look, now I can make my people, the armies will be strong. And he's just like, what are you doing? And that's an interesting moment over in Silverpine, which also includes really strong language. Garrosh is not at all...
He's not kid-friendly.
He does not mince words about how he feels about what's going on here. So Sylvanas, Silverpine is kind of interesting. Obviously, if you play a Worgen, you kind of see half of what's going on with that Forsaken storyline, but you really catch the majority of it, and you catch the high peak of it when you play through the Forsaken starting experience. And if you haven't played through the Forsaken starting zone, play through it up until the end of Silverpine, because it's worth seeing what happens there. It's very important what happens there.
Let's specify. It is still important what happens there if you are interested in the continuing story of what's coming.
It's very relevant to everything that's going on and everything.
And it also ties into Anderhaal.
It does.
Anderhaal is also important to this because Anderhaal is where we basically pare down the last... We lose one, rezzing Sylvanas the first time. That's when Anhilda the Caller dies. In Silverpine, when Sylvanas dies again, because I'm just going to say it, she gets raised again. I think it takes three of them that time.
It takes three of them.
It takes so three. So eight, seven, six, five. Five
and then
deaths.
In Anderhaal, the Alliance kills one of the Valkyr.
Four left.
And those four are completely unknown at the moment. We don't know where they are. No one has seen them.
We're going to assume that one of them is still in the Forsaken starting zone raising people.
Yeah,
maybe.
But the other three are in hiding, at the least. And possibly all four of them are. Now, it's very likely that Sylvanas has them still raising the dead. Because that's her modus operandi. On the other hand, I don't know how many corpses she's got left to raise up there at this point. Because she's been pretty industriously raising people.
She's probably been pretty busy raising everybody that she could raise while we were off on Draenor doing our thing on this alternate universe thing. Because we haven't really heard anything from Sylvanas in a while. We heard from her a little bit towards the end of Mists of Pandaria, where she helped take down Garrosh because she was perfectly okay with the idea of taking down Garrosh. And I think that the reason she was so okay with it was because out of all of the Horde leaders, Garrosh was the only one who had his eye on her very specifically. And the other ones all had their own problems to deal with. Garrosh was the one who set the Corcron up in the Undercity. He set up all of these like safeguards in place after the battle for the Undercity. Because he didn't trust Sylvanas, and he was the only one that didn't really trust her. The other ones don't really trust her either, but they've got other things that they're paying attention to, so she can kind of slip things by right under their nose. And I get the distinct impression that that's all she's been doing, really, is just kind of quietly biding her time doing her own stuff over in the Eastern Kingdoms while we've been busy with other things.
Yep, makes sense. But at any rate, the four Valkyr we have left, up until recently, those were the only ones we knew about. Like, that's it for Valkyr on the entire planet Azeroth. We know about the Kvaldir because they popped up in Cataclysm. And they're the ones who were fighting the Naga, which maybe means they work for Neptulon, or maybe means they just don't like Naga.
The Kvaldur are really fascinating. Yeah. I think they're probably my favorite out of the whole Vrykul, Valkyr, Kvaldir, all of the different, you know, ranks in particular. I don't want to call them races because they're not really races. I guess they are.
Subgroups
of that particular race of beings. Some of them ascend. Some of them are undead. Some of them are water dudes. And the Kvaldir are just absolutely fascinating to me. I think at this point we're actually maybe going to like wrap it up here and then jump into spoilers, because we can't really talk about the Kvaldir without mentioning the stuff that comes up in Legion, because the stuff that comes up in Legion is very heavily significant. So final thoughts on the Vrykul and what that means for humanity, Rossi?
I mean, it's pretty obvious that the Vrykul think of us as degenerate little mutant runts. It's going to be very hard to have any kind of rapprochement with them as long as they continue to look down their noses at us.
Do you think if we're successful in beating back the Burning Legion, that would finally like earn their respect? Is it a matter of earning their respect, do you think?
I don't know, because I think we scare them. They don't want to be that. It would be an awful lot like the way humans view Forsaken.
Yeah.
Humans look at Forsaken and go, oh my God, I don't want to turn into that thing.
I don't want to die and be that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Vrykul are like, oh my children are going to turn into little things? I mean, look at them. They barely come up to my knee, and they're like so weak. You know, and it's a lot of that. I think as long as that's there, it would be hard.
Well, I think it's a mix, right? Because it depends on, we don't know what happened to all of the, we have an idea, but we don't know what happened to the Vrykul that left. We don't know if there is, you know, the ones that left to go seek their holy lands, the ones that left to go protect their young or whatever the case was there. We don't know what lasting legacy they've left yet. So there could be some that welcome us as warriors, as saying, okay, you're tiny and pink, but holy heck, you just beat back, you know, how many times world destruction? Okay, maybe we're not weak. Maybe we're just getting smaller and mightier. So, I mean, there's a chance there.
Concentrated strength.
Concentrated power.
Joe, do you have any other final thoughts on this?
They've always been one of the most interesting races to me as far as races in Azeroth go. And I'm really, really curious to see all the different diverging paths that we have there. And I think what's going to be the most shocking, or at least the coolest part, is solidifying the history of humanity in Azeroth through the discovery of more about the history of the Vrykul.
Okay. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here for people that don't want spoilers. This is probably where you should go ahead and stop. We will talk to you guys in 2 weeks. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about just yet. As always, if you have any suggestions or anything, you can feel free to drop us a note on Patreon. Or you can also, I guess if you email podcast@blizzardwatch.com and just specifically mention you're looking for a topic on Lorewatch in the subject line, we will go ahead and take a look at those. We do like suggestions. So yeah, we'll just go ahead and say goodbye to people who don't want spoilers. Goodbye, everybody who doesn't want spoilers. For those of you who do want spoilers, we're going to jump into what we see in Legion, because what we see in Legion is actually pretty fascinating and pretty impactful.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I did not expect to see the Vrykul and the Valkyr and everyone else feature quite so heavily in this expansion.
I mean, I'll admit that I was hopeful to see more of them, because, you know, they've been one of those races they introduced in Wrath, and they've been pretty tantalizing since. They've seen like little hints of them in Kata. We saw the little pieces of them in Kata, the Kvaldir in Kata. And then in Mists, they were hinted at. The Pearl of Pandaria hinted at them. So yeah, I've wanted to see more, but I didn't really expect it. And my God, between the artifact lore that we get on them and Stormheim, there is a lot. And the Halls of Valor, for that matter. They're all over the Halls of Valor. If you're a warrior, and the warrior class hall is completely covered in Vrykul, they're everywhere.
Which I mean makes sense.
Yeah, they are led by Odin, correct?
Yeah. Back when we talked about King Ymiron, back when Ymiron decided, no, the Titans suck, we're turning our backs on them, it wasn't just the ones who wanted to save their children who said no. A lot of them said, no, you don't. First off, you're not king of all of us. You're king of some of us. The rest of us are going to go find the gods and get some answers. So a whole bunch of them left what's now Northrend and went south to what's now the Broken Isles and found Stormheim. And Stormheim is populated by whole tribes of Rykul. They're all over the place. And some of them found Odin. Odin, who is this... He's a Titan Watcher. And it's weird because in Mists of Pandaria, we found out that Rodan was one of the big deals among the Titanic Watchers. And we find out even more in our Legion because one of the artifacts is the Fist of Rodan. And it's specifically entrusted to him to help forge the Elemental Planes. And so Rodan himself made the Elemental Planes. And he's in charge of the far south Mogu. He wasn't really involved in the Vrykul at all.
No.
But Odin, meanwhile, seems to be an equally prestigious figure who's charged with rewarding virtue and valor. The brave and the strong are his charge. He is to bring them to the halls of valor and create this army of warriors who've died nobly. And they're dead. All these Vrykul up in the halls of valor are dead, but they're not undead. They're this whole new, this Stormforged beings. It's like they take the best Vrykul, pick them out, and that's where the Valkyr come in. The Valkyr that he has are pure creatures of the light.
Yeah.
And it's the holy light. That's what's, you know, Anne can attest to this because we fought one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pure creatures of the light, and they go down and they select you and they pull you up to the Halls of Valor and put you in a new body. And when you're in that body, you are this like immortal champion of the Halls of Valor. It's called the Valarhar. And that's Odin's host. And it seems like it's like Azeroth is being used as a crucible to select these beings who are then put into the Valarhar and are supposed to be like, they're supposed to be this army that comes forth at times of like great strife, but they're being held at bay. They can't leave because Odin has made an enemy.
And that enemy.
Yeah, that enemy is Helya.
And Helya is absolutely fascinating. Helya ties directly into the Kvaldir.
And into the Valkyr.
Into the Valkyr. She's kind of at the crux of everything down there. But yeah, the reason that Odin and the others, they're in the Halls of Valor. They can't leave the halls. They aren't allowed to leave because Helya apparently cursed them so that they have to stay there. They're trapped in there.
Yeah. Odin can use his power to get like one out,
mm-hmm.
but like one. That's like he used a lot of his power to specifically send one with you if you do the warrior shield legend, artifact.
Mm-hmm.
Odin uses a great deal of his power so that one of them can come down with you to get to pick another one up. And that's like, so the thing is apparently Odin made Helya a Valkyr and she did not like that.
Yeah. He apparently, the way that it phrases it is that she was a sorceress and Odin betrayed her. He killed her and twisted her spirit into a spectral Valkyr. And, she didn't like that at all. Well, Odin forged what are the swords called? The war swords.
The war swords of the Valarhar.
Okay, he forged those for the mightiest of his champions, and Helya stole them. She stole them and infused them with just like a piece of her rage, and gave them to her own champion, who used them to drag their souls, the souls of anybody that they fought, into Helheim. And Helheim is basically that's kind of where the souls of the unworthy and the dishonorable Vrykul, that's where they go. And that all ties into the Kvaldir, because that's what the Kvaldir are actually for.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't serving Neptalon per se. What happened basically were there was this tribe of Vrykul, and one tribe was struggling against the curse of flesh, and they actually like brought in their priestesses and said, okay, you guys find a solution to this thing. And all of the priestesses got together and they were like looking in the world spirits for answers to this. And what they found Helya, and the ritual went completely wrong. And Helya ended up corrupting them even further. So, and made them, shifted them into the Kvaldir. So these Kvaldir they manipulate the mists and things like that, and they usually patrol the coasts. But they're basically they drag the souls of the unworthy to Helheim. That's what they're for. So it's like this weird and kind of cool twist to the Cavaldir that I was not expecting. I thought for sure that they like served Neptulon or something like that. But because we had those Cavaldir, that's the thing that doesn't make any sense to me, right? Because we had the Cavaldir in Vashir, and they were fighting.
I have a question then.
Sure.
If they're made to drag souls to Helheim, why are they attacking Tuskar?
Because they want Tuskar have souls. They have souls. More souls for Helheim.
But I mean, that's the question, though. If Helheim is specifically for the unworthy Valkyr, then...
Well, no, because there's nothing that says it's specifically for the Vrykul.
No, it's just the souls of the unworthy.
And the thing is that the Cavaldir are maniacs.
Yeah.
They're angry. They didn't want this. They have to serve Helya. They don't want to serve Helya.
They were looking for a cure for the curse of flesh, and instead they found Helya, and Helya just corrupted them even further.
And
hastened the curse along to the point where these guys dissolve into seaweed at a moment's notice, you know?
And the thing is that when they drag the souls of the unworthy and dishonorable by their lights, unworthy to them is anybody they can beat, and dishonorable is anybody who doesn't just lose to them. You know what I mean? These are bad people. They're vicious psychotics, and that's fine by Helya, because so is she. Helya wants the world to suffer, and the Cavaldir are perfect. The thing is I honestly find myself wondering, Helheim, the only way to get there seems to be this giant boat.
Yep.
And I find myself wondering if the Naga attacked it.
Like, maybe.
That's the kind of thing the Naga might do. The Naga might pick a fight and then be like, oh, these guys are crazy, because they wouldn't know who they were. You know
what they were.
They went under. They went into their. You know, most of Vrykul went into their slumber like 5,000 years before the Night Elf civilization rose. They would have no idea who these guys were. They're like, oh, yeah, we'll just kill them. What they're seaweed people. Oh, what's going on? And you'll notice when you see the ones in the mists in Borean Tundra, they hate Naga. Even before Cataclysm, they hate Naga, and Naga hate them
with a passion.
I mean, a Naga gives you the Trident of Nazcatan to kill Leveroth. That's a Naga who gives that to you. Who gives it to you? It's like, you know, oh, yeah, you're a horrible surface person. You're a cow person, but here, take this and go kill that guy.
But you want to kill the Cavaldir? Okay, cool. I will help you out with that. Totally.
So it's interesting. I mean,
there's like some sort of something going on there. There's some sort of friction going on between those two. And what I find interesting is in Vashir in particular, we didn't know why the Cavaldir were doing what they were doing. We didn't know why they were fighting the Naga. We thought it was because they were serving Neptulon and they were trying to protect Neptulon. Like, they were trying to keep the Naga from summoning Azamot. They were trying to keep the Naga from doing what they do, which is basically allied with the old gods. So the Cavaldir, they aren't good guys, but they were kind of working on our side a little bit, or it seemed like
the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Yeah.
Yeah, they were working towards the same ends. They wanted to stop the Naga from invading and capturing Neptulon, just as we did. Only now it's kind of coming to light. Well, no, maybe that didn't have anything to do with Neptulon at all. And maybe there's something that goes even farther back than that, that we just don't know about.
You know, I'd love to see a throwdown between Jara and Helya at this point.
There's a point here where they mentioned that in Cataclysm, the Cavaldir we meet are led by Varkul the Unrelenting, who's attacking the Naga, and to burn the city. They want to attack the city of Vashir, and they want to steal the Crucible of Nasharan from them.
Yeah.
It doesn't say what they want it for. That the Crucible is what they use to summon Azamot.
Yeah.
Maybe they wanted to summon Azamot. I mean, keep in mind, they lost... The Leveroth was a Kraken, and Azamot's like a super Kraken. Like, there's different kinds of Kraken. One of them is the fishy-looking ones.
Yeah.
But the Azamot is a Kraken in game files. He's an ultimate Kraken. Maybe they wanted Azamot, too. Who knows? But they definitely seem to want to kill the Naga real bad. Whether or not they're working for Neptulon or not. For that matter, you know, who knows? Maybe Helya and Neptulon had a deal.
Maybe.
You know, she looks... If you look at her model, she's, like, all sorts of messed up and part water.
Part mist and part she's kind of like Mega Cavaldir, but the interesting part with her model, her ears, mm-hmm. her ears look kind of like Naga almost. They've got like the points to them. You know what I mean? It's just, it's very bizarre. There's something going on there that goes back further than the sundering. Maybe it's something to do with Ezshara. Like Joe was saying, maybe Ezshara had some kind of showdown at some point that we don't know about.
Could be. But besides the Kavaldir, I mean, we have the new Stormforged, who are, like I said, they're like immortal second forgings. They're like pure, you know how we have the Curse of Flesh turns them into flesh?
Yeah.
The Stormforged are like big metal ones again.
Okay.
They're like straight up golden bodied metallic. Then they have, there's a God King in the in Stormheim. God King Skorald, I want to say his name is. And I can't quite remember where he is. There he is. God King Skovald. And he has a tribe of his tribe of the Vrykul throughout Stormheim all follow him. Like the various tribes that are in Stormheim. They all follow Skorvald. And Skorvald is like said, all right, I'm gonna back a winner here. It looks to me like there's no way this world can be saved. But the Gul'dan here has promised me that if we fight for them, the Legion will let us conquer worlds for them. And hey, I like conquering.
We're all about the conquering, so.
So when you go to Stormheim, you're basically after one of the Pillars of Creation, which is one of the artifacts we're going to try to use to fix the world and close that giant hole demons are coming out of. Skorvald is seeking it too, except he wants to use it to, you know, help make the hole bigger and kill everybody. So the Vrykul you're fighting in Stormheim are basically straight up, they've done the same thing that Ymiron did. They turn their backs on their gods.
And they found a better god.
Yeah. And this time it's the Legion.
Which is even worse than the Lich King, let's face it. I mean, the Legion created the Lich King, so.
Yeah, so.
Kind of a level of above. They've stepped up a little bit.
The thing is, it's not all Vrykul seem down with this plan. Like, you run into Vrykul throughout the place, they're like, yeah, no, you gotta stop that guy.
Yeah, this guy's crazy.
He's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Like, you don't. He thinks this is a good plan. Have you seen the green stuff leaking out of his face? It's. So you've got like, there's at least one guy that I'm pretty positive is in fact Odin taking mortal form, who constantly, he's the guy that gives you the initial warrior quests, and he shows up throughout Stormheim kind of being annoyingly and insufferably vague. You know how they are, like, go here and this will happen, but I can't tell you more. Why not? Because that would ruin the plot.
Because Helya might find out that I'm here, and that would be bad. Yeah, there's all kinds of things going on. Obviously, Helheim, it will be a dungeon in Legion. It is not open on the alpha servers yet. I'm really looking forward to that one in particular. I'm looking forward to testing that one in particular because you're on the boat.
Yes.
You're on the boat and you're going to the Vrykul the underworld, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really know anything else about what happens in that dungeon or the story in that dungeon. So I'm kind of excited, although there's a little bit of apprehension there because I'm wondering if this is just going to be the airship round two.
Or the train.
Or the train round three. Either which way, it looks to be pretty fascinating. And then I believe you mentioned, Rossi, that there seems to be some tie between the Mogu and the Vrykul.
I don't know if this is just them using placeholder models or not.
Okay.
But when you go to Stormheim, when you're doing the quests and you get to the first part of finding out that God King Skovald is after the Aegis, you're sent to basically talk to this Titan Watcher.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a straight up Mogu. Like, it's a Mogu statue.
Oh.
And there's other Mogu statues all over the place, and you're trying to put them together. And it's interesting to me because to a certain degree, it would make sense that there'd be a point on Azeroth where the Mogu and the Vrykul would meet.
They kind of cross paths because they're kind of the same thing. It's just the Mogu were kind of the Titan, the little Titan creation things down south. And now maybe the Mogu were like the soldiers that were created down south. And then up north, that was the Vrykul. They were the soldiers that were created up there.
Or originally, perhaps, like, each like, they were, like, ranks. Like, you could have, like, infantry versus janissaries or something. I don't know. All I know is they use Mogu models for several statues. And
does
you
it
put
say
together
PH
one of them.
Model or anything on it?
No, but it's a statue.
Okay.
It's not, you know, it's not, like, it could just be an art asset they haven't updated yet.
Okay.
I know that when you put him together, he turns into a Vrykul-looking, He looks a lot like Loken when you put him together.
Okay.
When you're fighting the parts, he's a Mogu.
But so like Loken or like Raden?
Very much like Loken. Much more okay. generic than Raden.
Okay.
But it's interesting just on a pure like what if thing. Like what if the Broken Isles are what's left of like a place where like they would have all come together? Like the Titans creations. This is where the Pillars of Creation are found. This is important to the creation of original Azeroth. Like the Broken Isles are the last remnants of like the area that was right next to the well.
Yeah.
The Well of Eternity was right south of here. This place was touching it.
It all kind of ties together, and it feels like Legion is kind of pulling those strings a little closer together so we get a better look at what made Azeroth what it is to begin with.
Yeah, and they've updated the Vrykul female models as well.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's
so,
great.
All
right.
I wonder how many more of them we're going to see.
Okay, well, we should probably wrap it up here because I think we're running a little over, but that's fine. Joe, do you have any final thoughts on anything like Legion-related specifically?
Honestly, like you guys hit on something that I'm a little curious about myself, and I'm kind of hoping there's a little more to this with the whole Mogu and Vrykul connection. I mean, for me, I'm just sitting here thinking about it. It would make sense because part of the thing about the Vrykul is they seemed very, very specialized to the environment they were in. It seems very something that the Titans would do is create these specialized forces for whatever area they were going to be fighting in, like to give them an advantage. Mogu tended to be more sorceress, or at least that's what it looks like. Yes, they were great warriors, but they also were able to command magics at their beck and command. Vrykul were a little more warrior-like. So
brute
I mean, I'm
force.
Yeah,
although,
a little more force. Although
I
they
should
did,
point out. I got to point out the mystic Vrykul and in Stormheim, plenty of rune magic.
I was literally just going to say, but there's been talk about the Vrykul harnessing the whole rune magic. So, yeah. So I mean, it seems like having different.
Well, and that's interesting
in
too because the Mogu had rune magic that they were working with. They had rune casters, so there's like a connection there. There's a bridge there. Maybe Legion will fill that gap. I don't know. Rossi, any final thoughts on Legion stuff?
I'm just curious to finally, like, when I get a chance to, I'm about like a third of the way through it. I need to get the rest of the way through it so I can see what happens with God King Skovald. I know that he's the end boss of Halls of Valor.
Yeah.
The dungeon, which is really confusing that's also where the warrior class hall is. Every time I go there, I'm like, wait, is this backstage? Like, where are we? But yeah, I'm really excited about a lot of this stuff because we didn't see a lot of Vrykul. I think we've missed a huge opportunity here to make them playable.
I don't know necessarily whether we need them playable or not, but
I'd love to see them.
As far as I go, I want to see them open up Helheim for testing because Helya is like absolutely fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we've had a villain that really captured my attention, made me go, oh, wait, what's going on here? And she's one of those people. The whole story between her and Odin doesn't seem to be quite fleshed out. Or if it is, I just haven't discovered it yet on the Alpha as far as what was their falling out? Why did he make her a Valkyr? Why didn't she want to be one? You know, that whole ship
yeah.
thing that went on where she
and
cursed him after he cursed her. Or maybe it went the other way around. We don't know.
Yeah, like, and how did she become so powerful that she can actually bulk him and hold him up in the Halls of Valor?
Right.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, if he created her, how the hell is she that powerful?
And that's interesting too. And I'm wondering if that maybe ties into Ezshara. Like, did she yoink some of Ezshara's power while she was doing everything else? It would definitely explain the animosity with the Naga if that were the case. But yeah, this is all stuff that obviously we're going to have to wait and see because the Alpha, not everything's open in the Alpha just yet. Not every dungeon is open for testing in the Alpha just yet. Legion comes out later this year. World of Warcraft Chronicle Volume 1 comes out in March, and I would seriously recommend pre-ordering that if you haven't already and you're interested in lore, because this is probably going to answer a lot of those questions that we brought up today and questions that we brought up over the course of the podcast. Anyway, Blizzard Watch. It's made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, like this one, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And as I said before, if you want to suggest anything for us to cover on Lore Watch, please feel free to leave a note on Patreon letting us know, or you can send an email to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Just make sure that you put Lore Watch somewhere in the subject line so we know what it's specifically for. And I think that wraps us up. So we will just go ahead and say goodbye here. Joe, Rossi, say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Goodbye, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.